This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
I'm Sarah Carradine.
And I'm Ari Forth.
This is Crime Scene, a true crime review podcast where we get to the heart of how true crime stories are told.
We'll put documentary features, short series, and long-running episodic shows under the magnifying glass and examine what true crime stories can tell us about ourselves.
We'll have fascinating guests each week to discuss our true crime passions with new and recent releases, as well as classics.
We'll give you our recommendations and suggestions for more viewing, listening, and reading on the side. Okay, let's open today's file. We watched Bad Vegan, Fame, Fraud, and Fugitives. We had the honor of talking about Bad Vegan with the Nothing But Netflix podcast with Robert Cesenino and Chappelle. So the following audio will be us on Nothing But Netflix, but stay tuned. You'll get our recommendations, our suggestions, and you'll get our plugs and promos on where you can find us.
We have a very special episode here today talking about the new Netflix true crime limited series, Bad Vegan, and a very special episode, of course, a man who is a great carnivore. Chappelle is here. Chappelle, how are you?
I'm good. I am the worst vegan of all time.
One of the worst. I'm
seriously.
One of the worst.
Yeah, top five.
Worst vegan.
At the very least, you know, this could have easily been a whole documentary on that. People who just do veganism very poorly, because I could have starred in that film.
Yeah. Well, Chappelle, we have a lot to get to here today because we are joined by the co-hosts of a brand new true crime podcast coming to RHAP. Of course, we got to know just how great they are breaking down crime, fake crime, when we talked about Murderville a couple of weeks ago. And they are about to launch a brand new true crime wrap up here on RHAP. It's called Crime Scene. Let's welcome in the co-host of the Crime Scene podcast to help us talk about Bad Vegan. It's Mari Forth and Sarah Carradine.
Yay. Hi, Rob. We are back again to annoy you with some more murderish. It's not murder.
True crime related.
Surprisingly. Can we say how surprisingly surprised that there were no
even
murder
animals
here?
Were murdered in this.
Yeah. There's a suspicious lack of murder.
Yes.
just some chickens to provide chicken wings for the denouement of our not fake crime, but true crime.
Yes. And I love the tagline too. It's like Bad Vegan, Fame, Fraud, Fugitives. Like when we first saw this coming to Netflix, we told you like a month ago, like, oh, when it comes out, we gotta watch it, like reserve a spot for us. Man, did that excitement die kind of quickly.
I think we might have shot ourselves in the foot there. Chappelle, I've got a question for you. How do you know if someone's vegan?
Well, first they have to tell you that they're vegan, right? Isn't that the first thing?
They will tell you. You don't have to worry about it.
I was like, you never have to guess. That person's definitely going to let us know.
Yeah, that and CrossFit. Yeah, you'll know.
Dang.
Okay.
You'll know.
All right. Tell us about the new podcast. Why did you want to do a true crime wrap-up?
Well, Recap. we want Yeah, because I mean, true crime, it's like, it's always been a thing, but we wanted to approach this from a different light. We're like, we're a true crime review podcast. We're definitely keeping our RHAP roots strong here, where we're just going to be reviewing different true crime properties and talking about how the crime itself is presented, the like how it's shot, how it's filmed, kind of introspection. And the crime itself, like, we're gonna of course talk about the crime itself, but it's more like, how is it presented? What is it trying to make you feel? And was it, you know, at the root of things, was it entertaining? So definitely a true crime rehap up, if you will.
I wanted to, yeah, it could have been called the rehap sheet. Indeed. Murray Bright, we are interested in, what is the presentation of not only the crime, but the people in it, the victims, mm-hmm. the perpetrators? And having said we might have shot ourselves in the foot with Bad Vegan, Bad Vegan is a fantastic example of how was the crime shown and what is the attitude, what are we being asked to think about the people that are in the crime? And I think the maker, Chris Smith, could have done us more service than he did. But we'll get to that as we get to it. So Crime Scene is going to be not just recapping, although there will be that, but reviewing what is the content and the manner in which the content is shown. And we've got some great guests lined up, and we're very excited that you're our first guest. Are we your first guest? We're yours.
You're our latest guests.
Right.
Yeah.
Still a little special.
And we're your first guest. Yeah. So there you go.
Yeah. And eventually down the line, we're going to talk about like documentary features, short series like this one, or long running episodic shows. Like think of your, like for all of our ID Discovery fans out there, like some Southern Fried Homicide or something like that. Or like we will go down to that depth, if you want to say. We will go from your noir, docuseries, overdramatic type stuff to your snap, if you will. That's the range of what we're willing to cover. So we will love to talk about getting recommendations and suggestions from the viewers, and from the listeners, and we'll let them know how they can submit their suggestions.
Even Wives with Knives.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that's really exciting about this idea is that, Mari, I feel like that you are able to speak to a lot of the science that we see talking about the forensics in a lot of these true crime shows.
Yes, I will try to bring the science as much as I can, and I will try not to bring the disinformation as much as I can, you know, because that's the biggest thing, because we want to definitely explore all of these things. But if we don't know too much about it, we are not armchair detectives. I am not trying to solve a crime here. There is no Anand Saeed happening here in over here. I'm just trying to have fun, talk about some of these true crime, crazy, wacky docuseries and just discuss them with my good friend, Sarah.
Yeah. I mean, we do take the actual crime seriously. We are trying to stay away from the grisly, but if you want us to talk about grisly, then we will. We take the crimes and the victims seriously. We're not lightly at all, but we are looking at true crime and what it's become now. It is entertainment properties and what that means about how we view ourselves, not ourselves, but societally, and whether things have changed. We want to look back to classics like The Thin Blue Line and also documentary directors. We're planning to do like a full recap of a particular director's oeuvre, if I may. So we'll be coming at it from various different directions. And as Murray says, we really want to hear what our listeners would like to hear us talk about.
I have a recommendation.
Ooh.
Can I do that? I would like for y'all to talk about Joe versus Carol on Peacock. Talk to me and hear about Joe Exotic and Carol Baskin.
There's a lot of crime there.
Oh, no.
100% crime, 100% true.
Another over-dramatized series of a case that we all already know about. Where have I heard that one from? We'll put it on the list.
We'll put it on the list.
As Rob would say.
I know you're both very hard at work already on Crime Scene, because in addition to being here with us today, you have another episode of dropping in the Crime Scene podcast feed on Tuesday. People need to subscribe to the brand new Crime Scene podcast feed. Go to robinswebsite.com/crimefeed and subscribe. Leave some star ratings that just, you know, it's not like that you, when you're going to go review Pure Food Restaurant, maybe you don't want to leave such a good review, especially right. if you're an investor, but you definitely want to subscribe and leave some star ratings on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
Please, please go leave some ratings and some reviews, but we are hitting the ground running, and hopefully you'll have at least like two episodes in your feed when we drop on Tuesday. We are bringing True Crime Tuesdays to Rehab.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Robinswebsite.com/crimefeed. Well, since this is really that your area of expertise, that I think that it would be a disservice not to have you both lead this discussion today, talking about the Bad Vegan.
Yes. So Bad Vegan, when we originally approached you guys about wanting to see this, I literally had no idea about this crime. Like, when I tell you I was like, I don't know what any of this is about. The trailer made it look so interesting. I was like, okay, it looks like it's Tinder Swindler, like mixed with, like they kept calling her the vegan Bernie Madoff, but I don't even know if that's correct. If I know what a Ponzi scheme is, because
she didn't really run a Ponzi scheme.
She didn't pay anybody back. So is there really a Ponzi scheme? She just took money and left.
Also, Bernie Madoff swindled $17.5 billion. And Aldia Sama really was only in the hole for $6 million. So I think the crimes are not equivalent.
No.
Right. Exactly. So I really didn't have any idea of what this was going to be about. So, but I found it very fascinating. Sarah and I were talking about how like scams are what's fashionable in true crime lately. And you guys did a great job covering the Tinder Swindler with Asia and Sasha. But that's what it is. It was definitely a Tinder Swindler adjacent, but it was also like, the cult one. Oh, it's escaping my mind. I told Sarah the other day, but like it was truly something I could not have imagined. And so it was a 4-episode docuseries. And I would like to know, did any of you guys have any idea of what was coming when you signed up for this?
I didn't know what was coming. I finished the first episode and I said, I still don't even know what the crime was. What's going wrong? We built the whole thing up about Sarma had a restaurant and then she met a guy and it's like, all right, I'm still no crime has happened yet.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And what I was thinking about was Tinder Swindler meets Lula Rich. That is literally what this is. If you guys are familiar with the Lula Rich documentary, it's like getting your employees to buy in, you know, creating this great atmosphere. And then for her and the guy, it kind of turned like they made it seem like it turned a little mystical, but they didn't even explain that. So I was like, this episode was really interesting. So the first episode, it's just like we get a kind of a montage, like a quick montage of the goings on itself, the crime itself. And I don't put the quotations because I don't believe it was a crime. I put the quotations because they didn't tell us what the crime was. Mm-hmm. But we get a montage of it. So I guess they must have thought that not many people knew. We just get a montage of her, like she's famous. She's opening a vegan thing. Now it's like she's on the run and her dog's immortal and she was scamming people. Even Chappelle.
can we stop down on the immortal dog part?
Let's take a step back and actually talk about the crime for people who don't know. I certainly had read the Alan Salkin Vanity Fair article from 2016. And if you want to save yourself 3.5 hours, just read that. but the crime, for those who don't know, is Sama Melangalia had a vegan raw food restaurant in New York. It was called Pure Food and Wine. It had a turnover of 7 million. So I think, you know, an income of around 500,000. They were doing like up to 200 covers a night. And anyone that's worked in food knows that's a lot of That's a lot of people sitting down and eating your food. So she became involved with a man called Shane Fox, who she met via Alec Baldwin's.
Alec Baldwin's fault.
Alec
Baldwin is the villain.
I came here to see a dog that lived forever, and I saw the guy from 30 Rock like 18 times. Why is he so integral to this plot? Why is because he so important?
She only started talking to this guy because he was talking to Alec Baldwin on Twitter. She was like,
She
wanted to marry Alec Baldwin.
Yes.
No, he wanted to marry her. She sent him dog videos and dog clips. This is her fault.
This is her fault.
She fumbled the bag.
The whole time
was Leon's fault. Is it Leon the dog?
No.
It's never the dog.
So Alec met Hilaria at the restaurant, and that was the end of her fantasy relationship. Hilaria. So she meets this is Shane Fox, or is he? He calls her TBH.
Very fake name, Shane Fox.
Fake his name.
Very cool sounding name, too.
Very cool.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Mm.
Chappelle checks into hotels under Shane Fox.
Shane Fox.
I'm about to start now. Well, not Shane specifically, because this might flag some attention now that Bad Vegan is out. Mm-hmm. But a different Fox moniker probably is coming soon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mr.
The fantastic Mr. Fox. Ain't that already taken?
It is. Yeah. And that's where I thought he got it from. Yeah.
So he's
not very imaginative.
He
likes to rip off movies, this guy, by the way.
Yes, exactly.
That floored me. I had to stop watching when I got to that bit where he'd stolen the plot of Thor in order to involve her in his fantasy.
I still don't understand.
So the crime, if there is one, is that they went on the run after stealing $2 million from investors and employees. But it does, it touches on coercive control, but not enough. We don't get any experts telling us about coercive control. We can talk about coercive control later. Nobody speaks to the situation that these two people find themselves in, where there's a controller and somebody who allows himself to be controlled, perhaps. I mean, I don't know. 4 hours in, I still don't know.
I don't know.
So the crime is being a bad vegan.
Yeah,
guilty,
hypocritical, and it's
very
this idea that it's all or nothing. And the reason that she calls herself a bad vegan is she took that from Roxane Gay, who has a fantastic book called Bad Feminist, where she talks about we can't be the perfect thing, we can't be all or nothing. You know, it can be all or it can be something. Can we move towards creating a better world or whatever it might be? So you could have a vegan raw food restaurant and be vegan, but you don't have to be perfect. And I think part of the interest that people had in this and the thrill that people had about her being caught is she was caught because Shane Fox ordered a pizza from Domino's. So it became this whole thing of, oh, she's a
it
vegan.
It was the last domino to fall in this case.
Get out, Rob.
They really harped on that.
I waited all night to say that.
Really harped on that.
Yeah, it was good. It was good. Yeah. It was really worth it.
Yeah.
So that comes at the end. But this kind of salacious deliciousness of the chattering classes, who of which I am one, who said, aha, the vegans brought down by the Domino's pizza. This is not anything near the truth, and it's nothing about the story, but it's the thing that people glommed onto because they look for that hypocrisy. If you're a vegan, they look for that moment where you might have had chicken stock in something. I mean, so what?
Ooh.
Yeah.
We talked about this on the Netflix already, Mari. We had this in our Seinfeld episode. Do you remember, Rob?
Which part?
They go to the Hamptons, right? And wasn't the
Well, they tricked her. They tricked the woman that was the keeping kosher to eating the lobster.
Oh my god!
No, the other person wasn't. They sneaking the lobster in the middle of the night, and he got caught. That's what it was. Yeah, she was keeping kosher. She got caught trying to sneak the shellfish, and then like tried to trap her later on, and
prove it. Yeah, put it in her eggs, and she then made her eat it. Yeah.
Oh my god!
Yeah. It's a little different. That was fake crime. That was fake crime.
Fake crime. That was actually a crime as well. I just can't figure out why. Why these people aren't in jail, Rob?
Yeah. Well, stay tuned for that.
So, yeah. So I think I just want to keep going on the first episode because, like, the way that they lay this out is very interesting. I think my overall grievances with the property was, it didn't commit either way. Like, it didn't commit. You can be subjective in your storytelling.
Yeah, it doesn't fall down on one side or another. We get no dispassionate expert talking about what this might have been. There's no idea of the Patty Hearst of it all, or the Stockholm Syndrome of it all, or the Sven Jarli of it all.
I feel like mostly they never pressed her, because in Bad Vegan, the talking heads that we get, it's mainly her. A lot of it is her telling her story straight to camera, because like she says at the beginning, only her and the dude's name is Shane Fox. He presents his name as Shane Fox, but his real name is Anthony Sturgeon. And it's her telling her story. However, it never felt like they pressed her on some of the inconsistencies, right? Mm-hmm. Rob, what did you think? They're like, she kept saying some stuff, and I'm like, this don't sound plausible, lady. Well,
I don't know necessarily, like, to get her to cooperate for this. Like, I thought that they really made her come across as sort of like a sympathetic figure and a victim, and all this, which, you know, in a lot of ways, she is the victim. Mm-hmm. You know, I always want to be careful when we talk about things like this, and not to get into like victim blaming. How could she do this? But I think that they really wanted to, you know, give her side of the story. But I think that there were a lot of ways in which she was culpable. And I felt like that she was kind of twisting the narrative a little bit, like when they had talked about how allegedly investors claim that she had vetted people a certain way. And when they asked her about that, she's like, no, I might have said I knew them. Like, it seemed like she, I think, was still, you know, twisting the story a little bit to be more charitable in her favor. You know, she might not have been a reliable narrator.
Exactly. And that's exactly it. Especially, I feel like those first two episodes, I was like buying in. I was like, okay, you know, it had that twinge of, you know, she was really manipulated into doing something she didn't want to do. And then the final episodes, I was like, okay, but now she's starting to, there's some shifty answers here. She's not explaining some of her specific actions. And when I then went back and watched the first episode again, after I watched the whole series, I was like, then I started looking at her, wait, there's some inconsistencies here in this first episode here, you know? So, I mean, I agree. We don't want to victim blame. But I feel like there's a little bit more that she has not answered.
Yeah, the other talking head that we get a lot of is Alan Selkin, the journalist, the Vanity Fair journalist. And I thought, he's going to be the bracing outside eye who brings us, you know, true talk. And while Dharma is speaking for herself, and why shouldn't she, that he might have the outside perspective. But I think he is under Dharma's spell as well, the TBH, the tiny blonde human, as she's called. She is very tiny. And again, you know, we need to be very careful around eating disorders and so on. Mm. But so I thought, well, where's the acerbic voice? Where's the person who's going to come in with a different view? We meet endless people who love Dharma, and then endless people who thought, I wish she hadn't owed us money, but we still love her. Like, where's the person? Not true. That we'll dislike her, but that, and in terms of the four episodes as a piece of entertainment, when are we getting to the fireworks factory? When are we getting to the fireworks factory? And spoiler alert, we never get to the fireworks factory.
Right.
There's no meat there, if I may say. There's no meat.
Well, appropriately. Yeah.
Well, that was my issue, because through the first two episodes, it just seemed like they spent the whole time painting Mr. Fox or Anthony as this bad guy who took advantage of her. But at some point, I was like, well, if that's so clear, right, if everybody has the same exact opinion that this big, huge guy just basically like presented himself as her bodyguard, somebody who she could rely on, who also has lived a couple lifetimes and, you know, is setting her up to live in eternity with their immortal dog. Like, okay, fine. You give me all of that, but tell me, why is she in trouble? You know what I'm saying? Like, for the first two episodes, they don't even mention that. Every now and then she gives him a couple $1,000s, to the point where he's embezzling a lot of money. He's doing a lot of stuff. He's promising people millions of dollars. But at no point throughout the first two episodes were they even like talking about why she would be compared to Bernie Madoff, or why she would be accused of embezzling. I was like, embezzle. I was like, where is that? But it was almost absent of the whole Netflix show.
Yeah. Can you embezzle your own money? I mean, she was inappropriately taking money out of the business when mm-hmm. she had investors. So she owed money to people which she didn't pay back. I don't know if that's embezzling.
I definitely feel like those first two episodes it was very disjointed, because how in the whole first episode we get all the way up until like she meets and marries Fox or Anthony Sturgis, it's gonna just go back and forth. Like even in the documentary they went back and forth with his name. Some people were calling him Shane, some people were calling him Anthony, which is annoying. And I'm going to do it here today on this podcast. but they went all the way to that. They got all the way to them getting married. And then the second episode, they kind of took it back to her past to tell us about her past and about her growing up with crazy hairstyles. And, ooh, she's really nutty because she dyes her hair blue. But from all intents and purposes, she came from a very privileged background. Went to a like Wharton Business School. But why didn't we put that here? Like, I felt like this could have been an email, as Chappelle would love to say, but it could have been two episodes. Like, it did not need to be four. Yeah, it was a lot of fluff, and I did not like the choices of going back. And even in episode three, they tell us Anthony's backstory, and I'm just like, why are we here? Like, why do we keep going back and forth in this narrative? And then they didn't properly. Okay, I'm going, but they didn't properly like timestamp things, so I didn't know what time period we were at.
Yeah.
Some of these moments. Yeah.
Well,
Rob,
Tinder Swindler was 2 hours. You know, we got the whole thing and it was great. And I just wonder, like, in this genre, I mean, what's the sweet spot that you're looking for in a true crime piece of media? Is it like a multi-part series? Are those the most successful ones? Or is it like a documentary?
I truly think it depends on your subject matter, and you have to know what your subject matter dictates. Like them making Tinder Swindler a tight 2 hours was very smart. It was very smart. And they should have made this a tight 2 hours. Docu-series normally work. Like my first thing that comes to mind is Making a Murderer. Like there's so much that you can dive through with that warrants. Like that was like 8 parts or something to that effect. Like, I think it's, you have to know your subject matter and know how it could fill out several episodes or just 2 episodes or just one documentary itself. Sarah, what do you think about that?
Look, I'm very fond of the documentary feature format. So that's all in one, 90 to 120 minutes. 120 is pushing it, but I think the Tinder Swindler could be done. I think just stepping back with Chris Smith, he made he was a producer of Tiger King and the Doc Antle story. So he does like going back to the well. He produced and directed Fire, The Greatest Party That Never Happened. Terrific.
Yeah. Oh.
And
but the lesser of the two,
unfortunately, for Chris. And Operation Varsity Blues. Hilariously, this whole thing starts with Shane Fox being recorded on a phone shouting at Sama some effing Netflix documentary, Now Jesus Effing Christ. And I thought, oh, great. Like, you know the pitfalls, and so don't fall into them. It was such a Netflix production. It looked like it. The B-roll was beautiful and extensive. I think if you cut out the B-roll, you get rid of an hour. I don't know how many shots we had to have of her with two blonde pigtails walking
down the street.
Walking her dog.
Finally in the street with big bags, branded bags. It's like just one is enough. We meet some very interesting people in their own rights. There's an unhomed man who takes a liking to her. And I thought, well, so he's going to have some part of the story. No, it was just to say that she stopped on the street and spoke to Anthony.
He was my favorite.
Yeah.
I need to hear Rob's opinion of Anthony. Like, I truly do. Anthony, the unhomed man.
Yes. So I just thought it was wild at the end when he got the call that the dog needed like a place to go, he had a car and was driving down to Tennessee.
Yeah, he was in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's tough. But this is my favorite character, so I'm not going to be mean because I like him.
Yeah, he says he wishes he'd known because he would have thrown Shane in the river. I thought, yes, Anthony, you are all of us.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Nobody had anything negative to say about Shane either until him. He, like, everyone's like, yeah, he's big. He kind of gives you bear hugs and this, that, and the other. And yeah, he's kind of around, but we don't really know why he's here. We couldn't really figure out what he's doing here or why they get along, but we don't really know. But he walks in and you can always tell the mark of somebody who treats an unhomed person poorly. Like that, when somebody, the way you treat somebody who is less than fortunate, that is the, that's the key. And when that man said, oh no, he was mean to me the first time we ever met him, he was being a jerk. I was like, well, that's it. He's guilty. He's guilty of all crimes. But again, I had no reason to believe that Miss Bad Vegan here was even a part of it. They give us nothing about Sarma in that episode. Just that she's got pigtails.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And a dog.
And I was wondering, were they using this to kind of say that she, because they were also interspersing, they were kind of like, oh, she was going through some things at the time, so she had a big heart. She was always giving people money. And it were they trying to lay the groundwork of like, she's very susceptible to this type of con? Maybe it was very interesting, truly. And can we talk about, we like to talk about reenactments on Crime Scene. So like you guys said, the B-roll, they weren't reenactments, but you could tell they made Anthony go and sit down and pretend he was still unhomed. I don't know. They had Sarma just walking her dog. It wasn't until they got to like Las Vegas. I was like, oh, okay, that's kind of cute. And then later when they got to Pigeon Forge, I'm like, oh, this is great. I was like, look, how far is Pigeon Forge, Tennessee from me? And that looked kind of fun. That place looked kind of fun to me. I was like, my kids would love to go there. But other than that, it was just the same B-roll of New York every 20 minutes.
Yeah. The reenactment actor who does Shane Anthony continually climbing out of big black SUVs. it is good, but do we need him in slow motion with sunglasses and a phone to his ear
all the time
for minutes at a time? There's so much flab, and I don't say that lightly. There is so much flab. Spoiler alert, when you get to the third or fourth episode, it's all a blur. We meet a brand new character called Dustin, and I think, oh, okay, so Dustin's going to have like a really important, pivotal role in the crime or Sarma or catching Shane or something. No, Dustin just met Sarma and liked her. Mm-hmm. That's it.
I don't even remember Dustin.
You remember Dustin? Dustin was her friend.
Yeah, but is this all just to make her look less guilty? Like, what is the goal of the documentary?
Did she want to be in it? Like, I think that she does it I think it helps her case.
I mean,
but
yeah.
Does it?
I mean, well, at this point, like, you know, if you got this far, it's all spoilers. But at this point, she's already done her time. Like, this is all done and finished. So if anything, it's kind of a fluff. In a sense of just getting her side across, because like Sarah said, I don't remember Dustin, but I remember they found her inmate, like her roommate in the prison that she went to. Yes, Chappelle, they did. And the lady was like, oh yeah, I was kind of like a mama bear to her. And we cuddled under a blanket. I was like, she was there for like two sentences just to talk about how she took her under her wing in jail. I'm like, how did they find you? Why are you here? What was the point of this?
And they missed out the best thing, which was Sarma's nickname in jail, which I don't think I can say on the podcast, but I'll put it into the chat.
Please.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I was thinking...
I'll put it in the chat and then I can... This was in the documentary?
No, that's what I'm saying. It wasn't in the documentary. So, and there was this veil. And there's a couple of...
Getting this from?
Yes, yeah, Sarah, what's the inside scoop?
Side googing. There's a lot of side googing that goes on to illuminate, especially when something is like this. I mean, just to step back, I was so excited. On the title alone, I wanted to watch this. I thought Netflix, I thought this is so interesting. We're talking about cons. We looks like we're talking about coercive control, cults of one, attachment abuse, and all of this sort of stuff. Not that I relish and love it, but I think given the response to the women in the Tinder swindler, the negative response to the women in the Tinder swindler, I thought this should be more known, how Patty Hearst can go from being a good little rich girl to holding up a bank in 14 days. How do you do that? We all say, I wouldn't do that. It wouldn't happen to me. And I found richness in the side googing that was not in the documentary itself. And okay. In fact, while I picked up that he might have used one of the tools of coercive control, which is, sexual humiliation. She refers to it very obliquely. That went past and I thought, oh, I think that's what she was talking about. I'm not saying she should put it all on the table, but I think that, again, if we'd had an outside figure saying, that one of the arsenal of tools of coercive control is sexual humiliation, we would have understood. I mean, I think many people understood her oblique reference to it, but it's like, put it in or don't put it in.
Right.
But don't have her say, oh, well, you know, in those sort of situations, it's very difficult. Well,
a psychology expert or a psychiatric expert or something like that would have greatly benefited this. They had nobody like that on the talking heads. It was her like former employees who, like Sarah said, they were still like, oh, but we love Sarma. They weren't even, there was one guy that might have been a little disgruntled. And even when he was talking about the disgruntledness, he tried to downplay it. Like he was like, yeah, the restaurant was split into factions because at this point, she was taking money out of her accounts and they weren't making payroll. So they weren't paying their employees. And so the employees did two separate walkouts at Pure Food and Wine. And he was talking about how some of them fell into the camp of like, oh, this isn't Sarma. This is, you know, it's outside. All I just want my money back and I'll go get to working. And then the other camp was like, no, we need to smear her name because she shouldn't do this to people. And again, it didn't seem like they had got any of the name smearers on this documentary.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because what we talked about, I think Sarah was the one who brought it up, that the Tiger King was like the predecessor to this, and it was still by Chris Smith, right? And Chris Smith's strategy during the Tiger King was give you a little piece of the story and like the background of each of the characters until the end where you realize, oh, y'all are all guilty of everything. Like all of y'all should go to jail until we figure everything out.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like they tried to do that in this where they like give you a lot of her backstory. Eventually they give you his backstory, but they didn't have the other people, like you were saying, they didn't have, the people saying, no, this, they seem like sympathetic figures, but they're actually not. They're horrible. And they did these things to us or they committed these crimes. He spent so much time, I think, trying to recapture that Tiger King magic that maybe you're right. Maybe it is just a fluff piece where he thought, okay, I got some momentum. The Tiger King was such a huge hit. I know they couldn't foresee like how big it got. So now they're saying, okay, well, let's just try it again on a smaller scale with Bad Vegan. And if people like it, we'll just keep doing it. But I do think it does a disservice because, like I said, throughout, I didn't know if she was a bad person. I like, it just made it sound like she was being taken advantage of by somebody with an immortal dog. Like, so I was, and also like, cause halfway through, I was like, am I watching Hancock? Hancock and like, Charlize Theron, they are like meeting in other lives and like fighting all over again. I was like, oh, I've seen this movie. Yeah. And I was like, oh, I bet he has too. Because that's exactly what he's telling her. Maybe she should watch more Will Smith movies.
You know, I feel like with Sarma, I think that they were kind of boxed in where I feel like that they can't tell the story without her. Like the Tiger King story, like Joe Exotic can be in jail. And there's so many other people that are around that know the stories, that there's so many other people that can weigh in on it. But I feel like that she's the only one that can talk about like what's going on with her and Anthony. You could have just the people from the restaurant and the guy who wrote the article. But I feel like that without her testimony, I feel like you don't have a lot of this story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But also Chris Smith, I was Googling him too. He did the Madeline McCann documentary too. And that one I didn't finish because it was 8 parts. And I was just do not need 8 parts on this. So like it, as a property itself, and we'll get to our like our ratings and stuff like that, but like it some of this just did not make sense. And so even then, after we get Sarma's like background, we get like this is, let me tell you about the one thing that really pissed me off in this whole docu series.
Go for it.
At the end of episode 1, we get this dude Will, and Anthony slash Shane tells her, this is my friend Will. Will is the tech guy. Send all of your passwords over to Will. Will is a tech guy. He's tasked to, like, when Anthony leaves for days, because Anthony tells Sarma that he's Black Ops, which, what's the golden rule? If they tell you that they're Black Ops, they're not Black Ops. So he would be all vague, like he's with the CIA and he's on a mission, and he would just leave. And so it was Will's job to, like, kind of calm her down and to keep her communicating with him. And if he needed money, he pulled a Tinder swindler, my enemies yes, that have yes. me. So he would ask her for, like, random amounts of money, $100,000 here, $10,000 there, $17,000 there. And at the same time, telling her, like, oh, you got to do what I say, because the family, they're watching. And if you go through all this, you'll be rich. You'll be immortal. Leon, your dog, will be immortal. And it's just like, and it's just a slow build. And like Sarah said, the coerciveness of it, when you're in relationships like that, it's that slow build. The first thing is you get them to believe something small. You keep pushing it and pushing it and pushing it till the next thing you know, he's telling her he's lived 1,000 lives and he might not be from this planet. And she's kind of like, okay, sure. You know, but Will, this guy, he's presented to us. He comes, he sits down in a chair. He reads the portions of their emails and stuff. They're going back and forth. And whenever she's doubting Anthony, Will is like, stay the course. He's in a black hole right now. Just everything's okay. And she would just vent to this dude. At the end of episode 3, or the middle of episode 3, whatever it was, when she's finally started questioning Anthony, she's like, how do I know this isn't just you? How do I know this isn't Shane? I've never met you, Will. How do I not know it's just not you? And then his last correspondence to her that we see is like, you don't know. Even if you have to just have faith, even if it was, I could, you know, come up to somebody, I could hire somebody. He could hire somebody to just give you credentials and stuff like that. And this dude fades away. And the director and everybody's like, you never existed. I'm like, if you don't get out of here.
So this was, so Will was, hold on, Will was fake.
You knew that.
As soon as
Will Richards arrived and sat down with his cute little Irish accent at the end of episode 1, did you for a minute believe that he was real?
Yeah, I did. I was like, boy, why isn't this guy arrested?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I kept like, why is he's in on it?
Yeah. No, he's wild, because they say, well, this is Will. And he's like, oh, yeah, yeah. I'm here to keep her in line. I was here to make sure she didn't step out of line, because, you know, like, in case things got too hairy, I ain't want her messing everything up. And I'm like, OK, well, he's clearly not in jail. So he must have done something. And you're telling me that the film creator just made him up because we don't know if Will is actually real, or we're 100% confirmed that it's Anthony Sturgis.
Well, it's 100% confirmed that it was Anthony Sturgis emailing as Will. And this was a plot telling
device. He's on IMDb. Will Richards as himself, Anthony's associate.
That doesn't make sense. So even IMDb was confused.
Yeah, they lied to IMDb. Sarah, are you allowed to do that?
Yeah.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So Will, real or not, asks for her passwords to everything, including bank accounts and email addresses and so on. And then she's surprised because Anthony Sturgis knows things that she hasn't told him. Mm-hmm. Like this. If Will's a real person, Will works for Anthony and Will is telling him everything.
My mouth is wide open because she's like, how she's writing in her journal, you know, the whole time. She's like, oh, yeah, I went to the store and he knew I was at the store. Like, how could anybody know this? And Anthony Sturgis is like, ooh, it's mystical. It could be anything. Like, how do I know this? Maybe I don't know anything. Also, you didn't cash your card out when you were at the bar last night. You want to go pick that up? It's like, how do you know these things? And the whole time he's just got her account and just monitoring her banking information. That's incredible.
The clever thing with the money, clever in inverted commas, is that he told her, I'm not spending any of it. It's a test. You send me the money. The money hasn't gone anywhere. The money, it still exists. It's all for you. When you pass all these tests, you will get it all back.
And it doesn't matter. Like, he just completely kept telling her, what does it matter? It doesn't matter. It could be billions of dollars. I don't care if it's trillions of dollars. We're living forever, baby. It's me, you, and Leon the dog. Like, why are you worried about this money? Do you love me or not? Honestly, we talked about another... product of this same type of material way back when. No, not the Tinder Swindler. Are you familiar with the Pickup Artist?
Yes.
So on Robin Akiva, what is it? Get picked up? Get swindled.
Our
Pickup Artist. We talked about the book, The Game, and kind of how those techniques are used to basically like coerce women into doing things that they normally wouldn't do, or like almost like feign attractiveness by presenting people with like just like made up situations. Like you're basically like putting the situation in your favor, so when you go talk to this person, they feel like they are attracted to you even though they're not. Control tricks like negging and other things like that, mm-hmm. right? Well, you know, it sounds like this guy Anthony Sturgis was just really, really good at this. Right. Just controlling, mm-hmm. manipulating and conning this one particular woman. Now, I would be interested to know if he did this often. Did he have like a list of women that he was doing, like the Tinder Swindler? We know the Tinder Swindler had a whole network. There was like a call center of people and he was just like, he had them all dialed in my mind. But like this guy just happened to come across her. Like it's not like he targeted her. She definitely reached out to him. So do you think this is his first like a big con, or is he like a man of the arts, I guess?
Well, he had the ex-wife that we hear from, but we don't really get into like his dating history in between his ex-wife and when he meets up with Sarma.
His ex-wife, Chappelle, comes in the third episode where we get his background, which is still... Like basically, he marries this woman. She's on there. She's telling her story, and he's robbing her. They have a kid together. They get married. They have a kid together. She said that he told her, "Did you know if you gave a baby salt, they could die, and they wouldn't know. They wouldn't show up on a blood test or something like that."
Yeah,
and she said, "Yeah, an autopsy." Yeah, she said, "I never left my child with him.
Why would he say that
again?"
I didn't even understand. Like, was that while she was still pregnant that he said
that's
that?
When they had the baby. No, she said that's when the baby had just been born.
Yeah,
and it's the threat. It's how I could take away from you that which you value.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so you must fear and obey me. I think he was practicing with his wife. I mean, the very first thing she says is, "I can't. What do you want to hear? Every single one of the lies that he told me." She is able to give us a tiny bit of insight into his father. The documentary doesn't really go into the father, but the father confirms that that Shane Fox is Black Ops. So that's good. Sarma says his father confirmed that, but his father was apparently a violent alcoholic.
Gambler.
When Shane was three, he picked up dice and said, "Baby wants a new pair of shoes." I think that's family mythology, but
that's
nonetheless,
that's cute, Sarah. That's adorable.
Well, maybe he was baby.
Saying that.
I can. She's just very cute. It's like when children first start talking and you get them to say, and you say bad words and they say them back and you go, "Oh, that's so sweet. That's gorgeous."
Say Sarma's jail nickname.
Don't say Sarma's jail nickname. But, I mean, one thing about Sarma that they almost goes past without notice unless your ears are pricked up quite early on in the first episode. She says she was at Wharton and then it wasn't what she wanted to do, so she left. And yeah. she says, I wasn't under any financial pressure yep. to get a job.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, well, you know, that tells you something. I mean, we do, yeah. So she went to culinary school, which is, you know, extensive and expensive. So I think she comes from privilege.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's the second of two. She's the younger sister, I think, you know, perhaps given a lot of attention, shall we say.
Yeah, mm-hmm. let's stop here. Let's really dig into this. So, what ends up happening is she sends like just large lump sums of money to Anthony till it totals up to $1.7 million.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry. I just had to yell that. Unfortunately, he uses his access to her to then scam another $400,000 from her mom. And when it comes to the end here.
Yeah.
So she was pretty well off, like Sarah just mentioned. And I think it goes to say something about how, you know, being rich can collate to coercion like this. Patty Hearst was the example. Every cult in the history of cults has always had rich people involved in them. You know, Children of God, to name a few, the Soleil cults. They all always have some. I mean, look at Charles Manson. I mean, like it when you put like privilege and then being rich and I wonder if there's a correlation between susceptibility and even on just the smallest scale, you know, even with celebrities and what they're the veganism of it all, you know, like CrossFit of it all. Like you said, I wonder if anybody has looked into that about that correlation. And he didn't pick her, but he was just the man who knew how to extract the money because we didn't finish, but. His ex-wife, he basically just stole all her stuff. Him and his dad just stole all her stuff and left one day while she still had a baby and just poof. Like that didn't take any type of brain here. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering with Sarma, with him and Sarma, I don't feel like he's a criminal mastermind by any stretch of means. I just kind of think that this was probably the right perpetrator with the right victim in a sense.
Yeah. Mm. But to go back to when Chappelle asked, like, had he done this to a lot of women? I do feel like that he came in with a lot of material for when he got to Sarma. I suspect that he had this racket worked out quite a bit before he got to Sarma.
If he did, I'm surprised that they wouldn't bring that up. And I mean, if people are wondering what happened to the money, because they don't even tell us what he's right. even truly doing with the money until the end of the third episode, but he's gambling it all away, yeah. literally in the slot.
Chappelle, this movie should not be called Bad Vegan. It should be called Bad Gambler. This man
had
$1.7 million to go to the casino. And he lost at least the Tinder swindler was always working on taking out the next person he was going to rob.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Tinder swindler puts this man to shame in all ways, in all shapes, forms, and fashion. Like he could have watched that first and got some ideas because this is nothing compared to that. I do have a question though about how he got his victim, Sarah. So we know that he was tweeting back and forth with Alec Baldwin. Does Alec Baldwin make any statements about his connection to this man? Because why does this man feel so confident?
He has his hands full right now. Okay,
I think he's got his own stuff going on.
Enough scandals going on.
Away.
I'm just saying. The man had 50,000 followers on Twitter. He's talking to Alec Baldwin. What's up?
Did he buy those?
Well, let's think about Sarma in a public blog writing things like, again, not from the documentary, but she says why Leon's called Leon, and then Shane guesses why Leon's called. Oh, it's very special that you guessed that because most people think it's Kings of Leon, but it's actually Leon, the professional, and you guessed that. She also writes in her public blog in 2007, she got a message that said, your life is my dream life. And so she wrote in her public blog, I'm thinking these people would all probably choke on their flax crackers if they knew that not only am I walking around often feeling entirely spent, weary, and even on the verge of a nervous breakdown, but that I'm also carrying a few hundred thousand dollars of personal debt, that I'm full of burning rage to build this empire, a residual and occasional reappearing destructive closet eating disorder. I think if you're a coercive control person, if you're a game person, you would read that and go, that's somebody I might. Look, we don't know how many people he tried it on, and we don't know how many people he tried and failed. So when we say, where are the ones before, there may be ones that went a little along the way and then went, hang on, stop. What's the family? Who's Will Richards? Who wants my passwords? He just was very effective with her. I see them as very symbiotic in this crime. It's a crime to owe people money. I see that she is a seeker. She puts out into the universe, in other words, blog posts that anyone can read on the internet.
Yeah.
But she's a seeker, and people can find what they're looking for. She's a tiny blonde human. He's a big guy. And over their relationship, he gets bigger and bigger and bigger and eats and eats and eats until he's 300 pounds, apparently, and is repulsive to her. He tells her this is another test for her to advance. So I think that also wasn't explored. It was like good Sama, bad Shane Fox. Whereas where's the truth in between? What were they getting from each other? We know that, I mean, the documentary tells us that she married him because he said he had so much money he could make her $2 million her debt disappear.
Yeah.
And her accountant said, for tax purposes, it'd be better if you were married. So she's also seeking something, and some of it's not spiritual.
Yeah. They got married in within 48 hours. It took 24 hours to get the paperwork. And then 24 hours later, they were married. And then she was ashamed of it. So it's not like this man swooped, read her live journal or her Tumblr blog, found out all the things that were good about her, coerced her. And then she decided, like, I'm really in love with him because of all the things that he's done. No, she says, I have $2 million of debt. Let's go ahead and do this married thing. And then she does it. And then she hides her wedding ring. She doesn't tell anybody who works for her at all. So that's when you start to raise an eyebrow and think, okay, maybe something's not right here. Because if you told me that he presented her all of her wants and her dreams, like the Tinder Swindler guy, he shows you that he has money. He doesn't need your money. But then he tells you he needs you. And so that makes you feel like y'all are connected. But here, if you told me that this man said, I am the big guy that you need, I have all the answers to all your prayers, and I fell in love with that, I would take that. But she did not fall in love with that. She heard the money and then she got married. And there were moments, even when she was trying to break up with him, where she would be like, yeah, and then I said, for some reason, I was caught up in a moment and I said, I love you. But she never said, I fell in love with this man. You know, it was very different. Yeah. So I feel like she could have cleared her name a little bit better, honestly, because it didn't do great.
At the very end, they say, you know, they throw the theory out there about he ripped her off. But, you know, you could argue that, you know, she got into this thinking that she was going to take his money.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. And that she then just maybe got too over her head because they talk about another associate, Nazim, who actually did kind of get over his head, because he said by the time he realized he's the one who there was an associate of Shane Anthony named Nazim, and he would go with Anthony to some of it when he would disappear, and he was the one who told us about the gambling portion. So he knew that Anthony was gambling away the money, but he had already given him like close to $100,000 anyway. So he said, I was already in the hole. If I leave now, then I'm never getting my money back. And that's a great segue to let's get to bad Sharma. As Sarah said, if we're going to get, let's get into what her crimes could have possibly been. So, basically, we get that even before, right around the time that they got married, Sharma admits that she had broken up with her famous chef boyfriend who had helped her originally open the restaurant. And she had been without a business partner for, I think it was close to at least 6 years or something like that. And then she married Anthony, but she was saying that she was just kind of so depressed and she was so in her head. She had already stopped making those payments to this dude named Jeffrey, who was a restaurateur who had helped her and Michael open the restaurant. But once that their relationship soured, she then bought the restaurant from Jeffrey, but it created $2 million worth of debt. Yes, Rob.
Can I say about the ex-husband? I was just completely shocked that he left the show in the first 10 minutes. We never heard from him again.
Never again. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I thought he was the bad guy. I was like, oh, no, but he'll be back.
He was surprised, too, because he told Jeffrey to be her. And Jeffrey was like,
I mean, this is interesting. Yeah. And again, not to harp on bad summer, but he, Matthew, Beanie,
Kenny?
His name?
Kenny.
Was a very hot, in all senses of the word, chef. He was everywhere. She, went to him to pitch that she would help him write his cookbook. And then they were inseparable. And then they opened the restaurant. Now, I'm not saying that she doesn't have food chops, but he is obviously he's obviously the one with the chop. And Jeffrey's the restaurateur that backs them. And when they have a falling out, it's me or her. Jeffrey picks her, and for quite good business reasons, because she is the tiny blonde human that's at Pure Food and Wine talking to people. She's the front facing person, and she seems to have got a fantastic executive chef who we hear from, who takes over from Matthew, and then we never hear from Matthew again.
Yeah, and he was bad. Michael. Sorry. He was bad at paying the bills too. Like, everybody here was bad at paying the bills. That's why Jeffrey chose Sarma, because Michael still wasn't paying the bill. Mm-hmm. So, Chappelle.
I thought you were going to say something. They just said that he was really bad with money, which I find super ironic, considering what you went with is the, you know, titular bad vegan. Like, you know, like, you pushed out Matthew. If we're going to look at this and say that she is as guilty as, you know, as we are led to believe, then she went and, like Sarah said, sought this man out, basically got him into a and Matthew into a relationship. You know, let's just say this is all strategic, that she did this on her own. She went out. She was like, I'm going to help you with my cookbook. Let's also date. Let's also start a restaurant, because she was barely in the chef game, but she knew business. So she needed somebody to get her business off the ground. Then, because she knows business so well, she goes and she basically gets this man pushed out of his out of the restaurant business that he started with her. And then now she has this debt. And what does she do to go get rid of the debt? She goes and marries this huge rich guy who can protect her, who has this money, who says she can, who can make the love of her life, her dog Leon, immortal. This woman could be the ultimate villain. And we just got fed a documentary about how she is a victim because she has pigtails and she's tiny.
I just
hadn't thought about it until now. It's crazy.
It's a possibility. And so then one of the more amazing parts of the documentary is Anthony, Shane Fox / Anthony, sends her to Rome. Just says, go to Rome. This is a test. Go to Rome for 10 days. Meanwhile, while she's in Rome.
Wish somebody give me that test. Yeah.
I'm telling you, right?
I'd pass, definitely.
But while she's out in Rome gallivanting, she shows all these pictures like, oh, I was so sad in Rome. I was there for 10 days. I didn't know where he was at. But, you know, I walked around. I'm like, girl, what? And while she's doing that, he's back at Pure Food and Wine, like telling the employees this is like a takeover. It was so weird. And where did all these recordings come from? I'm kind of confused about that. They don't really go into how they get these recordings of him and the staff. But so the staff that are there, they're like, we're confused. He's confused. But the main thing is he's going and taking their money and saying, oh, I'm going to go deposit it. But he was not depositing it.
Foxwoods.
And right. And so they're sitting there. The employees are trying to call Sarma. They're like, yo, what's going on? Where you at? Like, who is this guy? Why is he taking our money? Why is he saying that he's taking over the business? Why is he firing people who don't agree with his logic? What is going on? And Sarma's just like, I'm in Rome and I'm being tested. And while I'm in Rome, he tells me to wire him $100,000. And she's like, she didn't have it. So she had to find it from one of her friends to send him $100,000. I'm like, there was just so much money that was just flying around mm-hmm. here. It was truly amazing. So it was kind of hard to believe that she was in Rome and had really no idea what he was doing at the restaurant. I'm sorry. That's a little weird. And then we had to get, which this caused the first walkout. So because him and Nazim, well, they were taking money from the employee's payroll. They were not getting paid and they hadn't gotten paid for a month. So it led to the first closing of Pure Food and Wine for about 3 months. The whole entire staff actually went to another place. And then once she got the money, they came back. So they do really love her. But because the food and wine, Pure Food and Wine closed, she had to then go on, like, she had to go and get investors. She had to go on a money seeking spree. So she goes to look for all these investors. She raises $850,000 in order to open the restaurant back up. She opens the restaurant back up, but same old, same old. They start taking that money out of the restaurant. Again, the employees are not getting paid. And again, this is where it's at the part where it's like, she's like, yeah, I'm just sending him money and he's just demanding money and because of the family and she's being tested and she has to pass all these tests and it starts to kind of be unbelievable. And I think even in the documentary, they say by the time it opens a second time, it kind of feels like she's more complicit because she's now actively seeking out investors. She helped him lie. She went back to Jeffrey to try and say that she met this guy who wants to buy the restaurant. She gave Anthony Sturgis a whole different name. I think that Michael. Was the Michael.
Yeah.
They tried it. It was so weird. And she was like, this is where she started sounding sketchy because she was trying to tell Jeffrey, you and Michael can go meet up and then you can, you know, buy the thing. And then Jeffrey was in Miami and they both were going to fly to Miami. But right before she was going to fly to Miami, he steps out of line and is like, this is you. You have to go do it yourself. And she goes to Miami to talk to Jeffrey, pretending that the guy that she is married to is a whole different man. Like it was
that she vetted.
And then,
yeah.
That and she vetted.
Who missed his plane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he for the third time.
Yeah.
This was unbelievable.
Jeffrey Chowderow, if anyone knows, he's a very interesting figure. He's a restaurateur. He goes into, you know, big swank hotels and puts in, you know, fine dining. I find him a very interesting figure. I thought perhaps he might have some cool-headed comments about Sama. Instead, he very carefully chooses his words, I think. I think that he likes her as a person. He also knows that he's in the hole for $2 million. He can probably write that off, I would imagine. Nobody likes to be owed money. He didn't like to be fooled. I think it was when mm-hmm. he was supposed to meet Michael, the fake investor, in the Miami thing, yeah. at 6 o'clock. Mm-hmm. He got the message from Michael that he had missed his plane. He says, well, you don't miss your plane at 6 o'clock. You missed your plane at 4 o'clock. And where was the message then? So I think he is more concerned about, you know, having been them trying to take him for a fool than them trying mm-hmm. to take him for his $2 million.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah.
See, this is probably like the worst bit of publicity Warden could ever have. Like,
I think they might have some worse publicity.
I'm just saying they have a good track record at this point of just being bad for business when it comes to the media. Yeah. Like there's like one huge glaring example. Mm-hmm. This is not great. That show, is it Two Broke Girls? The girl is like, I went to Warden. It's like, well, girl, yeah. you're press. That's the whole purpose of the show. But by the time they say Warden and then Tom Brady shows up, we should have known this was all a scam. Everything is a scam.
Yeah. Once Tom Brady's eating there, you knew.
Yeah. Tom Brady and Giselle walked in. Bet. Okay. Got mm-hmm. it.
Can I also say that they're all thrilled that Woody Harrelson walked through the restaurant with bare feet?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
yeah.
Owen Wilson, I think it was.
Excuse me.
I mean, yeah.
Weird.
Wow. Do it right.
When he said bare feet, I was like, that can't be, isn't that like against the
It's
the
vegan, Mari. It's not vegan if you're not barefoot. Dude.
yeah. I mean, is there any possibility, though, that I feel like there's a lot of people that are sort of like still like kind of financially attached to this, that like, is there any
talk of possibly like getting the band back together, where that in some ways, like as much as they talked about Sarma and everything with Anthony slash Shane, they hyped up the restaurant quite a bit. The restaurant was always great. Do you think that this is sort of like step one of pure food and wine coming back?
It could be. I mean, that was a huge phase when that opened. Like, I remember that whole eat raw, it's raw that. So, I mean, but she said people won't lend her money no more. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. But
she can't ask for the money.
Yeah. An investor come along, Sarma, we need your vision. Like, I'll back you.
Maybe she gets the Tinder swindler. Treatment.
Well, you make Sarma the hostess.
Yeah.
And you keep her away. You keep her away from the money.
No money at all.
I think there are other, I mean, she speaks as if raw, pure food and wine was the vanguard, the first of its kind. Yeah. It wasn't really. I mean, fine dining, yes, and it certainly all looked great. And I'm not against going. I'm a carnivore like Chappelle. I'm not against going to a vegan restaurant. So she also, her vision is to spread veganism throughout the entire world. And she tells a story about when she was released from her 5 months in prison, that she spoke for 20 minutes while she was waiting to a guard who she thinks, yep, I've converted him to veganism in that 20 minutes. And that she feels is her mission. I think it's this idea of mission, higher purpose, that is driving this privileged white girl, if I can say.
Mm-hmm. Okay, question. If that's the case, how come she wasn't able to convert this 300-pound man to veganism? Mm-hmm. Because his ass ordering his Domino's pizza is what got them collars in the first place.
All right. Let's wrap it up. So when they come back from this failed trip to, I guess, extort money from Jeffrey, the way Sarma explains it is, you know, we kind of just took all the money out of the bank account and then we just got in the car and Anthony started driving.
Let's see the country.
I really didn't think, like, you know, we're on the run or anything. I just thought he just, I was shut down and he just drove away. I was like,
I mean, I had to say my name was Emma and his name was Chris.
Yeah. We weren't like avoiding the police, but we weren't looking for them.
She verbatim said that. Like, yeah. We were not. Yeah. She took bandages to hide her tattoo, but you know, we're not on the run at all.
Yeah.
Nice. And they end up in Vegas. They drive to Vegas, literally blows all the money. She said, like, her and Anthony, they didn't even spend much time together in Vegas. She was either like walking down the strip, but she kept saying how there was no good food options here at all. And I just
Vegas. There's no good restaurants there.
Put that woman back in jail. She gonna lie.
No healthy, should I say, healthy food options.
Mama said. Fuku is amazing in Vegas. Go try it.
He's down there gambling away the money. And this is where he has her passwords and everything. So as they're gone, he's emailing her mom saying, like, oh, Sarma's not doing too well. I need this amount of money. Her poor mom, even though her dad and her sister told them not to, they don't mess with this man. Her mom was sending money. And then at the end, we found out it was $400,000 worth of money that she sent to them while they were on the run in Vegas. And, they still managed to run out of money. My biggest thing was he was like recording her. Like this is where we got clips of him recording her in Vegas. And he's like, Sarma, you got to get up. And she's like crying and breaking down in all of the clips. And I'm like, why do we have these? We had clips of them like on the road and stuff like that. I think I know why we had this. I'm assuming he was sending them to her family in order to extort money out of her family. But Rob, what did you think about these clips?
I had wondered like where they came from, but that's a good point. Yeah. Maybe this, that they sent to the family.
I mean, she looks like hell. She does look like Elle. I assumed it was to get the money from her mother.
The mom, maybe, yeah. Mm-hmm. So they run out of money, and so Sarma manages to get one of her friends in New York to loan her some more money, like $60,000.
$60,000 like this friend has available friend. For her.
Can you where my friends?
Friends right, Mari. Yeah, Mari. We friends. What's friend? Up, Mari?
No, I ain't got it. You know what? Where's Asia?
Right.
Where's
Asia?
Asia, wealth.
Asia,
yeah.
Please.
Give me 60 G's. So they go back to New York to get this money. But this is where, like, they managed to get in and out of New York. And he knew, like she said, oh, I felt like he knew that I could only be there for a day or for a night. And then they went to Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. And this is where you're getting their talking heads where they're like, Anthony clearly didn't know what to do now. They were just on the run. They're in Pigeon Forge. Like I said, there were some great shots of Pigeon
Let's
Forge.
Let's have a meetup in Pigeon Forge. It looks I'm fantastic.
Yeah, how far
it
away from
it? It has a Titanic.
Close to you, Rob.
Yeah. On an iceberg, and there's water, and there's
a magic quest.
Right.
For the people out there that know what a magic quest is, it looks so cool.
The Hatfield and McCoy live show.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
The Go King on. Kong. They have a replica of King Kong on a building. That looked so cool.
Brilliant.
But this is out here. This is where she said she made a friend. Where did that guy work?
Dustin.
Chipotle.
Yeah, Dustin. Oh, Chipotle. Dustin, this was Dustin. Yes, Dustin from Chipotle.
Chipotle. How do you feel about Chipotle?
I mean, aside from the E. coli, it's fine. You know.
Right.
Yeah.
The outbreak every once in a while. Overlook
that. Yeah,
what was she eating at Chipotle?
What was the what's the vegan options at Chipotle? Was she eating the chips?
Sofritos. Sofritos. That's what they say. I think that's it.
The burrito bowl.
Why would you make me say it when you are clearly more adept at that, Chappelle?
Yes. Sofritos.
So they have the friend there again. Like Sarah said, I don't know why.
For no reason.
But this is where they're undone because, spoiler alert, while they're on the run, they've been on the run for almost a year now, at least 10 months. And the employees, of course, the employees have walked out. They're doing a demonstration now. They're not being paid at all. But the police don't care. It's not until the investors contact the police when the police are like, oh, I guess we can put a warrant out on the arrest because they're not paying back the investors. So when they put that warrant out, that leads to the dominoes. I didn't mean for her to come out like that.
That's good, yeah.
But it leads to the two policemen in Pigeon Forge finding out that, like, oh, a credit card had pinged here. And then they're like, oh, it pinged at the dominoes. So then they go to the dominoes.
For 5 hours, we've got to go step by step through everything that happened. And we knocked on the door and then the dog barked and then she put her head out. And then I saw it was her. And then we put her in the car. And then I had two handcuffs. I mean, guys, come on. Come on, Chris Smith. Get a move on.
Yes. So they're captured in Pigeon Forge. They both spend like about a week and a half in Tennessee while they're being extradited to New York. Then, of course, she makes bail. Easy, but he sits in prison for like a year. They bring embezzlement cases against them. She did go to prison. It wasn't just
5 months.
5 months.
Years probation. So he got times though. So they're both found guilty. He got time served and probation and a 5 years probation. And she had to go to jail where she had a nice time with her friends there for 5 months. Sorry, I'm not making light. 5 months for her with 5 years.
She spent longer in that Vegas hotel room.
Exactly.
That drive from Vegas to New York was longer than that.
Come to find out when they tallied it all together, they basically defrauded people out of what? $6 million, Sarah? What was the?
Six point something, but basically $6 million.
All that money just flying around.
But you know, as Anthony Strangis would say, it's nothing. It doesn't matter. It's not real.
It doesn't matter.
It's not real.
It's fine.
Yeah.
Is that a better lie than my enemies are after me? Or is like, which one is better? It's my enemies, or it doesn't matter. We're just going to live another lifetime. What's wrong with you? Mm-hmm.
Clearly, well, that one, because that one got the most money.
there's shame there. You're so worried about money. You're so attached to money. Why are you worried about the money? It doesn't matter. You'll get it all back. Send me $100,000. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a scam that only works on rich people, because you start to tell me like, why are you worried about money? I haven't already walked out the door. Like, what are you talking about? I'm broke. I ain't got none. This one was like, yeah, you're right. I could just go ask my friend for another $2 million. Like, it'll be fine. I could just ask my friend for $60,000. It'll be okay.
Right.
Yeah. You were talking to the right person, because you can't sell me that dream.
I felt like it was really missing at the end. Like, what is going on with this guy now? Where is he? I mean, I feel like that we got much more of a follow up on the Tinder swindler in terms of what he's doing. He's still out there. We have no idea what, I mean, unless that Sarah knows from the side googs.
Well, the side googs are a little brief on him because, of course, he is not the interesting one to everybody. Everybody wants to look at the TBH and relish in her humiliation. Mm-hmm. They were divorced in 2018. She says she hasn't seen him since Tennessee, since they were transported to the plane in Tennessee. But we do get phone calls,
bizarre phone calls between
them. Mm-hmm. I mean, they sound like co-conspirators, and she knew she was being recorded. Like, not in anything that they say, but right at the end, there's a phone call between them, and the tone of it is very bantering. She's sort of, oh, don't say that, and it's all very strange. She's living in Harlem, and she is working as an executive assistant. If someone would invest, she would open Pure Food and Wine again in the same spot. So, again, there's that magical thinking that it has to be that place again. And the fee for participating in this Netflix show bypassed her entirely. It went from Netflix to her attorney, and her attorney paid off all the employees. So all the employees have been paid off. If you're an employee who hasn't been paid off, they can't find you. They have the money in escrow for you. So any employees of Pure Food and Wine who are still owed money, get in touch. They have your money.
Oh,
I did do a little side hustling there for a while back in my day.
I remember that.
Rob, you remember that? I think Rob's my witness.
You had said that Anthony Sturgis was like, hey, Chappelle, this is off the books.
Right. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, in another lifetime, like,
you know, I'm good for it, but let's just say $200 an hour.
Right, exactly. And I was like, just to sweep the floor? That's amazing. But also, I believe you. I really believe you. Hit me up, Netflix. I'm ready. Give me my money. I want it now.
So that's it for the property. Any final thoughts on Bad Vegan?
Yes. I felt like that the show really did a bad job of the follow-up on what happened to Leon the dog.
Is the dog immortal or not? Damn it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's why I came here. See, I was led astray. I saw, and not a stray dog, I saw the summary, and it said the woman was told that her dog would be made immortal, and then she became scammed by some man that she married. Yes. She married the man for the immortal dog. I have not found out if this dog is around. Is the dog dead? Who has custody of this alive dog?
Is the dog still alive?
Where was the dog when she was in jail? She went to jail for...
And her father. Just, like, I think her dad was watching.
Her father had it. Her Daddy John. We do hear from Daddy John all the way through. He seems like a very interesting man. He's holding back his opinions. I would like to get Latvian John over a bottle of Slivovitz and probably get some opinions out of him. But he was being very a gentleman and very restrained. Yeah, the dog, she is monitoring its in his intake. She blogs about the dog's intake because the dog has digestive issues.
Mm. Okay. But still
he
alive.
He has to be pretty old now.
Yeah, well, it's lived a couple lifetimes.
It was a stray dog because she was looking for dogs for Alec Baldwin, as we know. And she must have Leon, and Leon came into her life. So Leon's about 12. is a staffy, so 12's quite an age. Mm-hmm. I also wonder if the digestive issues are Munchausen's by proxy, but that's a whole other thing.
Ooh, mm-hmm. Ooh, yeah. Call her out.
Yeah, I mean, it might be. Yeah, isn't that the craziest pickup, like the craziest way to curve somebody? They're like, hey, I want to get to know you. Like, or get a dog.
Here's a dog.
Here's a dog. Mm-hmm. Have you tried? Like, Alec Baldwin is shooting his shot. Like, man, I'm just lonely and I'm looking for the perfect one.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. My bad. Yeah. Woo, too soon. Alec Baldwin was trying to holler at that lady and she kept sending him emails about dogs. It was like, that is so cold. Could you imagine being like, hey, ma'am, I just want to get to know you. I'm lonely. I just feel like we could be good together. And she's like, no, here's a pit bull though.
Mm-hmm.
Peace. Has she not curved Alec Baldwin, her life would probably be a little bit better. Just saying.
Yeah.
Just saying. Good with that. She has other problems right now, probably. But this documentary wouldn't be made about her. I just say that.
Yeah.
That's where she went wrong.
I completely agree. So let's get into our recommendation portion of our podcast. Here on Crime Scene, we like to give reviews. And we like to give reviews between 1 and 5 magnifying glasses. How would you rate this property, this true crime property? And would you recommend it to others? So, gonna have Rob go first.
Ooh, so, I have a question about the grading scale before Rob goes. Like, this is our first like crime scene deep dive.
Yes.
So I want to know if we're gonna do 1 to 5. Is 5 the Tinder Swindler or is a 5 Tiger King? Like, what are we looking at? Because I probably have strong opinions about the magnifying glasses. This is like the stopwatch.
Yeah,
it's a rating, not a ranking.
Exactly. Okay. Yes. Well, it's your own personal opinion of the show you watch.
Are there half magnifying glasses?
Right.
Sure. Why not? For you. Sure. For
Fancy Fencerton, Rob.
Yeah.
Pick a number.
So I wasn't as down on it, but I am not the connoisseur of these true crime series as Mari and Sarah are. So I'll give it 3. It was fine. Okay. It held my attention. It was enjoyable. The time went by quick while it was on, so I wasn't mad at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Chappelle, how about you?
I will give it 2 because I feel like true crime either has to be completely like blow your mind and like incredible where you don't even believe it, or somebody needs to be murdered. And there was no murder here, so I'm going to have to dock it just a bit because you know that's why people come to true crime. People come to hear the murder. You know, so
that's very true.
For me, it's a 2.
Yeah. And honestly, I mean, I'm surprised he didn't get to that point because he almost got to the point where he sucked her dry and she was about to become useless to him. But yeah. So, Sarah, how about you? What would you give this ranking?
Well, I like to start sort of mentally with any property, giving them 5 and then they lose magnifying glasses as they commit sins. It's not exactly a 1-for-1, but I think the lack of any outside eye. I was even thinking of, you know, get a couple of the NXIVM NXIVM cult members, just to talk about their experience, not even to comment on Sama, but just say, this is how we got caught up in the NXIVM cult. Just to illuminate, there was no illumination, there was no meat, there was no fireworks factory. So I think that it's very watchable. I would put it on and potter around doing other things. You probably have a better time. You're not going to actually miss any of the plot because there's a tiny, you know, there's a 5 pounds
human
plot in a 10-pound bag. Human.
Yeah.
So I am going to give this a solid 2 magnifying glasses. What about you, Murray?
Okay. I'm wavering between 2 and 3 as well. I don't think it's anywhere higher than a 3. I'll give it a 3 because I think if I'm not analyzing it too deeply, it's fine. But there are a lot of questionable decisions in the making of the property. That was just really like, the length was too long. The storyline, how the storyline unfolded was not cohesive enough. Let me give it a 2. I'm gonna go back down to a 2 because the storyline wasn't cohesive enough. It wasn't until I went back and watched the first episode that I even saw like they had some dates, but not all. And even if it was, it was like 2011. It was like really small somewhere, like 2015. You know, it wasn't really like present. And it could have been done way better, I feel like. And I think it suffered from way too many episodes. So yeah, I'm gonna give it 2 magnifying glasses, and then I'm going to give a recommendation. Like we like to do recommendations that if you like this property or if you want something similar to this property, this is what we suggest. And my suggestion would be The Crimes That Changed the World, and ID. That's an ID, like quick bite. Patty Hearst, The Crimes That Changed the World. If you want to go a little bit more in depth with the whole Stockholm Syndrome, the coercion, the pretty rich heiress being brainwashed into doing something, and then the trial that follows, like, was it her fault? Like, I think that one does a way better job of examining all of the different things to consider when you have a crime of this type. Sarah, do you have any recommendations?
Yeah, I do. I mean, as I said before, you can read Alan Salkin's Vanity Fair article. It was published in December 2016, and he just did an update on Thursday because of the Netflix. But I would recommend a book called See What You Made Me Do by Jess Hill. It's not an easy read, but it's very illuminating. I think you have to put it down and go for walks occasionally. But she also did a podcast called The Trap. So if you're interested in a good look at coercive control and intimate partner crime, it is one for you. It's, again, it's tough, but it's not bleak and awful. It makes you think about behaviors that you've seen, perhaps behaviors you've experienced to a greater or lesser extent. So those are my 2 recommendations there.
Yeah. And, you know, we didn't prepare you guys for that, so sorry.
Yeah, well, I was just taking notes. Cool. Yeah.
we'll put all of those in the show notes. Yeah. But next time on Crime Scene, we have True
coming
Crime Maven
Tuesday.
Coming up on Tuesday, your True Crime Tuesday. Sarah D. Bunting, one of the originators of Television Without Pity, without which none of us are here. And she currently has a true crime newsletter called Best Evidence and a true crime bookshop called Exhibit B Books. She'll be talking to us about a very old Robert Stack hosted episode of Unsolved Mysteries. It's a strange episode. There are reasons why she picked it, which will be revealed in the podcast, not revealed here. Now, it's season 2, episode 16, or episode 21. It depends on your streaming service. It's the Georgia Rudolph, Steve Sandlin, John Thumper Brown episodes. We watched it on Amazon. And also, if you listen, Sarah has a special discount for Rob Has a Podcast listeners at her bookshop, her Brooklyn bookshop, Exhibit B book.
Yes. And at Crime Scene, we are eager to hear your feedback and suggestions for future episodes. So you can follow us on Twitter at Crime Scene, RHAP, that's SEEN, or email us at Crime Scene, RHAP at gmail.com. And then you can also subscribe, like Rob said, go to robhasawebsite.com/crimefeed to subscribe to us on all of your platforms and, you know, leave, rate, review, and subscribe. Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, I just want to tell you, Chappelle had mentioned to me earlier about that he has a interesting idea about how that he can make your podcast be immortal.
Okay.
You may want to just hit him up.
I'm listening.
He has listening.
Yeah.
Does it cost any money?
We ain't got to worry about that. Money, no issue. Listen. We just know I'm not the best vegan. I do eat animal crackers every now and then. So just know that going into it. Hit me up. We don't have to talk about money yet. It might not even come up. But if it does, it don't matter. Don't worry about it.
How about you guys? What's coming up on Nothing But Netflix? Have y'all decided yet?
Yeah, Rob, we got
to
talk.
We have to talk. Yeah, I think we have something big in the works, but I think we're just gonna just lock in those plans before we talk about what's coming up next week on Nothing But Netflix.
I think we're good for this coming week, this upcoming week, Rob. But yeah. I do think we're working on some big stuff coming up. And so, yeah, please send us your suggestions still. Nothing but RHAP is the Twitter account. We love to have those suggestions. And let us know if you see something that pops up. If it's true crime, we might shoot it over to Mari and Sarah. Yes, but if it's something in our wheelhouse you think Rob and I would like, I think just go ahead and let us know. And of course, review the podcast. 5 stars only. That's all we're accepting these days. You know, mm-hmm. We tried to leave a 1-star review, but it didn't work. So just keep leaving 5-star reviews. It's fine. And just tell us how much you're enjoying it and what else you want to hear us talk about.
Yeah. Have you looked at Byron Bays yet? I think Kirsten should come on and talk about Byron Bays. Hot dummies on the coast of my beautiful state of New South Wales. Mm-hmm.
We got a couple of suggestions for Byron Bays. You're mm-hmm. not the first
so
one.
Hot.
Yeah.
Really?
So
dumb.
Yeah.
The yeah. Hot. So like, hot.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. So this is it. I guess I forgot. I didn't do my rest of my plugs. You can always find me on the Wrestling Rehab Up every week with me and Matt Scott. And you can follow me on Twitter at Mari Talks Too Much to like the number 2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Sarah, you got any more plugs?
Yes, you can follow me at Sarah Carradine on Twitter and over on Post Show Recaps. I'm covering Bridgerton episode by episode, where season 2 is about to drop. That's very exciting. We've finished recording season 1. You can hear those one by one, twice a week. And also the extraordinary Taika Waititi, Rhys Darby HBO show called Our Flag Means Death, with Brooklyn Zed and Grace Leader, which has, like an onion, many layers.
Like a parfait.
Mm-hmm.
Like a parfait. Yeah, I like
delicious,
that.
Delicious. I had one of your food and wine, yeah. Yeah. So good. So good.
What's up, Rob? What's going on?
Yeah. I mean, I'm just covering Survivor everything. And reality TV, Beyond the Edge and more over at robiswebsite.com.
Yes. Millie yeah. Gang, shout out.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, the Millie Gang, you reunited here on Beyond the Edge.
Yes,
again, another show I will not be watching, but I would love to check out the podcast.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Same.
Yes. And I am busy, of course, as y'all know, doing a lot of podcasting over on Post Show Recaps. Puya and I are still talking about Bel-Air. I'm talking about The Walking Dead with Jessica Lease, AJ Mass, and Josh Wiggler. And Mari and I are talking about
yeah,
Atlanta. You know, Atlanta, the new season of Atlanta is dropping this week. And Mari and I have done 2 previews to get everybody ready. And now we're ready to jump into season 3 of Atlanta. So check that out. And then, yeah, I think that's all I have going on. I probably forgot something, but, you know, charge to my head, not my heart. Yeah. That's about it, Rob.
Okay. Well, this was so much fun.
Yes.
Time of my life.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for having us on to discuss more true crime and to be silly with you guys.
Yeah. Hey, well, this was so much fun to go through everything from Bad Vegan. Can't wait to see what's coming up on Crime Scene. And of course, make sure you're subscribed and ready for Tuesday at robhiswebsite.com/crimefeed. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.